Hello, everyone, and welcome to Are Your Fundraising Events Making Money? It's time to figure that out. I'm Brian Saber. I'm delighted to be with you today. This is a brand new presentation, though it's something that's been on my mind forever. I am speaking to you today from South Orange, New Jersey, where I live and work. And if you could type in the questions box where you are listening in from today and what position, what hat you're wearing today. Are you director of development, director of special events, board member, executive director, volunteer, consultant? So where are you listening in from and what is and what's your position? If you could type those in the questions box, I'm going to put on my reading glasses so I can see. Welcome, Stacy, executive director. Vera's from Charleston. Raya, executive director from South Dakota, the Discovery Center. Julia from Billings, Montana. Hello, Billings. I'm going to be virtually in Montana in 2 weeks through the Billings, through the Montana Nonprofit Association. So I hope you'll join me. Philly, Detroit, tons of you. We have hundreds of you on today, by the way. I will not be able to read these all out. Eric is from Monterey. That's a nice part of the country to be in. Welcome, everyone. I'm delighted you are here. Now, many of you know me, I think, from previous webinars. Some of you are members, and you know my nonprofit background, most of it. I'm a fundraiser and so forth. So, but I'm going to share something else with you today, and that which, and you'll understand why I'm doing this webinar. I have an undergraduate degree in economics, and then I went and got an MBA from the University of Chicago, the most quantifiable, conservative business school there is. Big mistake. And I promptly went out with that degree and got myself a job for a whopping $36,000 as the executive director of a dance company in Chicago. And I see there are some of you from Chicago here. You might know Joseph Holmes Dance Theater. It's no longer around, but it was a mid-size, well, for dance company. It had a $200,000 budget, and they were impressed by my MBA. I had no experience, and there was only one other employee. But I've always had this numbers background, and I can't help but try to be strategic and look at things that way. And for those of you who know the styles, I'm a kindred spirit, but my secondary is mission controller, and that's where all this analytic comes in. So it's always sort of rankled me that special events don't get the analytic treatment they need, and we end up doing lots of them just because we have them and all of this such stuff. And I really wanted to bring some of my sense of what how we should be evaluating these events to the field. So I hope this will be really helpful for you today. I want you to type in one more time as we're starting. Yes, for dance thought. Aaron, yay for dance. Yes, we love dance. We miss it. I can't wait to be watching it again live. So I would like you to type in, if you could have your wish come true. And I'm not going to, I won't say who's saying what, but which event would you stop? Which fundraising event at your organization or which event that you go to would you not go to? Would you stop tomorrow? What is the one event you wish you never had to see again, hear about, run, get a gala? Oh, gala, just the word gala. Dinner dance, Giving Tuesday. The big annual dinner, golf tourney, big banquet dinner, annual fundraising gala, auction, cocktail party. All of these give me a little anxiety. Our fundraising dinner and auction, sweetheart ball. I don't know what a sweetheart ball is. My, any event with an auction or a silent auction. Amen. You're all typing in very similar points here. Another one, another auction, gala. You know, many of us don't like these. Here's a secret. Many donors don't like them either. And I'm not saying, I'm never going to say we shouldn't have them, and we'll walk through this, but they're not the end all. They're not the panacea that we sometimes think they are. And hopefully this webinar will help many of you ditch one of these events you don't like if it's really not as economically helpful as people might think. So I think you know this comes with a worksheet. Now, if you didn't get a chance to download, it's there in the control panel. You can click under handouts. You can open it on your screen, and it's an Excel spreadsheet. So it's editable. Don't try not to mess it up, because once you mess it up, it's messed up. But we decided to do it this way so it's most helpful for you. And you may not even complete it all today, because you're probably going to want to go back and get some more figures, because you'll see what we're going to talk about. Please ask questions. Kyle, I'm going to have you watch the questions box. And if there's something I should take during, please shout that out to me. And otherwise, I'll take some questions at the end. But if there are relevant ones, I'd like to take them during. So I hope that's okay, Kyle. I didn't ask you in advance. And if you're just coming on, we will be sending you slides and a link to the recording and everything by tomorrow, so you don't have to write down what you see on the screen. Okay. So let's jump into these key concepts. So the first is that fundraising is a portfolio. I've always looked at it as that. So we have two goals in a portfolio. We want to diverse, we want to maximize income and minimize risk, right? And whether it's personally or professionally. Now, last year we found with events, there's a lot of risk with events, right? The worst case scenario, which we always think about with events, what if we can't have them? Now, many of us ably turned to online events. Some of them ended up being more successful because they were less expensive. We're still doing them now. Many people are getting tired of them. We hope to get back to in person. And luckily, you know, we've avoided all the rubber chickens and swag bags this year, but some of that's going to come back. So portfolio. So in our personal portfolio, when we have our own investments, right, we have a balance. We have stocks, which are riskiest. We have bonds. Maybe we have real estate. We may own a home. We keep something in cash. My question to you is, on a personal front, would you say you are, in terms of your investment, are you very risky, somewhat risky, not very risky, not much, or not at all? Type that in. What's your, what, for when it comes to your personal stuff, where do you stand? Let's see, I'm seeing not very risky. We've got one risky, not much, moderate, somewhat, not much, moderate, somewhat. Very few of you are saying very, right? Very few of you. Very few of us have a lot of capacity for risk. It scares us, right? We want to have some sense. Well, fundraising is the same way. Right? We want to have all types of income at our, well, our, I should say, we'll get to fundraising in a second. For our organization, we want to have all sorts of income, because we don't want to be reliant on one source. I worked in social service for many years, and one of my goals was to knock down the percentage of government funding, because we'd have four or five large contracts that equaled maybe $6 million out of $7 million or out of six and a half. I know some organizations that are 95% government funded. Too much risk in one pot. The government cuts back on a contract, cuts a contract, and what are you doing for that program, right? So our organization income is some mix. If you're an arts organization, you do have a lot of, in decent times, non-COVID times, you have earned income from ticket sales. If you're a university, you have tuition. If you're a hospital, you do have the payments people make for services. Some of you, if you're in social service, have very little earned income, but you still try and have a range of income. Now, charitable giving. So last year, the new numbers are about to come out. We know that giving was up significantly last year. The Lilly School of Philanthropy is predicting a 4% overall increase next year, 6% in 2022, very bullish. So, but 69% of our money comes from individuals, 9% from bequests, which are individuals, and half of all the foundation money is individual or small family foundation money, where a person, a couple of a family is really giving their own money, but they've parked it somewhere. So most of the money is coming from individuals. And we know from our experience, the largest dollars come from the relationships we have, right? When you think of your, if you think of your own giving, most of us make our largest gifts, not for an event, not online, not via direct mail or phone-a-thon, but where we have a relationship, where we sit on the board, where we're known as a donor, where someone has asked us individually, where we have a passion, where it could be our religion, it could be a medical cause that's near to us, it could be our alma mater. So we have to make sure that our fundraising portfolio reaches everyone, that we're not just doing gifts, that we're not just doing special events, which is a big piece for, especially for newer, younger organizations, right, that we have a variety of things. And each of the pieces of this portfolio has risk. Right? Each one of them also has a different cost. Some things are less expensive, some things more expensive. And I realize now I meant to include, or I should have included one more chart that I use in many of my other webinars. Many of you have seen it, and it shows how expensive various types of fundraising are and the dependency quotient on relationship. Well, we talked about relationship, but in terms of expense, over time, planned gifts and major gifts are the least expensive form of fundraising. Now, it doesn't mean you put all your dollars into them, but the most expensive fundraising is special events and direct mail. So if we're spending all our time on special events and direct mail, then we're spending all our time on the most expensive fundraising. And part of the reason it's most expensive is that it's hard to get those gifts because there isn't as much of a relationship, especially with direct mail. You buy a list, you send out 10,000 pieces, you see what you get back. Those people mostly have no relationship to you. They may have some factors that coincide with the giving profile at your organization, but it's expensive. Every time you acquire a donor, and with special events, year after year, you're sort of recreating the wheel. You have to go ask a lot of new people. Maybe you have a new honoree, and it's all the people known to the honoree and so forth. So we need to diversify. Some of our fundraising is going to be incredibly efficient, some less so, and we keep going until it's not efficient. We need to figure out what makes it efficient. Here's our next concept. They must be worthwhile based on the fundraising alone. Now, people always say to me, we're getting visibility, we're honoring people, we're thanking people, we're building relationships, we're networking. This is a way to find new donors. Yes, 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 but you can have a cultivation event, a thank you event, a networking event. You can do all those other things other than fundraising throughout the year, and you should, in all sorts of venues, all sorts of events that don't raise money. And they're much less expensive and much more efficient. We don't have to do anything fancy in an event that's not meant to raise money because there's no expectation people are going to get something in return. Further, the people coming to all those events are interested. Either they've made gifts and we're thanking and recognizing them, they're interested in our cause and we're exposing them to it. Our board members and donors are inviting people they know will be interested or think they will be interested, and then expose them to the organization in a really palpable way, in an interesting way, by seeing program. It's nice to have a presentation at your event, but a lot of people aren't even focused on it. So I believe the event must make sense on the bottom line to be a fundraising event, and otherwise I might not fundraise. Few organizations can grow large if focused on events. Universities, hospitals, arts institutions, most of their money does not come from events. You don't get to a $1 billion budget that way. Now, some of the national diseases, heart, diabetes, cancer, they run walks and telethons and things like that across the country. They have a national framework. And so altogether, they're raising a tremendous amount, but they have an economy of scale. They have marketing departments. For most of us, that's not the case. As a matter of fact, I'd love you to type in, how many full-time fundraising professionals do you have at your organization? Can you type that in? How many full-time fundraising professionals do you have? And on with the glasses we go. I can sort of see, but I'm seeing 1330, just me, 0333, 2.5. 18. Amanda's got a big crowd there, which is wonderful. Virtually all of you have three or fewer. And you know, most nonprofits do. 85% of all nonprofits have a budget under $1 million. So you can only do so much work, right? You're going in many directions and you don't have a national presence. You don't have a national marketing team. So very hard to grow large on these events because you have a limited audience for them and limited infrastructure for them. Next, and we could spend a half hour on each of these concepts. I don't like looking for net percentage. I like looking for net income. Now I'm going to use a lot, unfortunately, they are going to be sort of economic and money type terms, and those might drive you nuts. But here's what I mean. So, you know, just because you're making, 80%, if you are in the smaller pie chart, right? You're making eight of the $10,000. You bring in 10 tour expenses, you make eight. Doesn't mean that's a worthwhile event for you. You could have much higher expenses, 40% in the pie chart on your right, 40% higher, right, much higher, but you're raising more money and it makes sense given the size of your organization. On the other hand, your income has to be relevant to your bottom line. So, right, if you have, you can have an event that nets $20,000. Well, that's meaningful if on the left you've got a $200,000 a year organization, 20 from the event, 180 from everything else. If you're $1 million a year organization, does the $20,000 event make sense? So there are many different ways to look at this. And by the way, I don't like the 15% or the 30% people. It's like that bogus 15% overhead number that's just driven us crazy in our field forever. I don't think there's any one number, one percentage or anything. You have to look at it in relationship to your organization, your goals, your objectives, the size of your budget, how much staff you have, and really understand the impact. And I feel that most events happen without any of this. And we end up in this, mindset of we have to do it, we have to do it, we always did it, we've got to do events, this is the way to broaden our exposure and so forth. And the problem is that there's an opportunity cost. So I don't know how many of you know that term. That's an economics term. It is the most, it's the number one concept I took away from my entire economics career is opportunity cost, if any of you have heard that. And that's based simply, everything has an opportunity cost. If I'm spending my time on something, it's time I can't spend on something else. If I'm spending my money on something, it's money I can't spend anywhere else. And the goal is to maximize all your resources. So you have to figure out how much opportunity cost there is. So when I find that an organization spending, you know, a quarter of their year on an event, I think of what they're not doing with that quarter of their time. And we're going to get to that in this next section as we talk about the calculations. So now it's time to calculate your income. And I did say in the promo to come with an event and some statistics, some dollar figures. And you might do that now. You might just follow along and fill them in later, because at some point your eyes are probably going to roll, because this is definitely boring and quantitative, but important. Okay, so here's where we're going to start to use our worksheet. So once again, if you haven't opened it, it's under handouts in the control panel, and you can open it on your screen. It's an Excel spreadsheet, or you can print it out, you can write in, and you can do all the calculations later. For some of you, you'll want to sit back and digest this. But here's how I would love to see everyone analyze their events, or somewhere along these lines. Okay, here we go. We start with the gross income. Line number one, how much money did you bring in from everything? Ticket sales, these auctions many of you would rather not have, raffles, paddle raise. Maybe some of you don't know paddle raises, where everyone in the room, you hope, raises the paddle, says, oh, I'll give 10,000, 5,000, 1,000. You work your way down. Contributions from people who didn't attend but gave otherwise, rounded up. So question line one on that sheet is your gross income. Right, and that's, so that's everything, and I should explain, so gross, everything that that event generated directly. Right, we can't say, oh, well, someone came to that event and then later in the year they gave us $1,000 for something else. That's not event income. Okay, second, also easy, generally, is your direct expenses. What are all the dollars we spent specifically and additionally on this event? You know, the, whatever it is. Did you have to get a Zoom account for it because it's online? Did you have to hire a technology company to help you run all your Zoom rooms? There is a line there for additional staff, right? Did you have to hire people just for the evening to check people in, to even online to run the rooms? Maybe you sent out swag, some sort of little gift package, and did you have to hire someone else to put all those packages together? Did you have postage to send them out and so forth? So those are all your direct expenses. Those are pretty easy and straightforward. And most of the time, this is how people calculate their event. Here's all the money we brought in. Here's what we spent directly. Boom, this is how much we raised. The problem is that that boom is very inaccurate and misleading, because we have lots of other expenses. So we have indirect expenses. Indirect. So all the other resources that went to this event that never get calculated. I've worked for years with an organization that does a very big special event, and they raise, there may be a $3 million a year organization, they raise maybe $200,000 through their event. Seems like a lot. Of course, there are expenses. But I also found out that the director of development spends a quarter of the year on that event. Now, let's say that director of development is earning $80,000 a year, plus benefits and such. So easily $25,000 of her income has been spent on this event, a share of her assistant's income, all the office supplies she used, rent. So if you have someone who's sitting in a seat in an office, these, you know, we still mostly have offices, even if we weren't in them this year, that person's taking up space, and there's a rent cost, there's a utility cost. We have to have more space, more utilities, more technology, more computers and such if we have more staff. So we have to take into account, to some extent, all of those other costs. If you just take into account the staff time, that would make a big difference in your calculation. The others might be too hard, but please think of how much of your time is being spent. That's that opportunity cost. So have you spent, I mean, you can even write in the questions box, what percentage of your time is spent on the one event you'd like to get rid of? Type that in the questions box. What percentage of your time is spent on the one event you'd like to get rid of? Let's see what we have here. And let's see, what did Mariah write in? For better or worse, our accounting and reporting has us calculate all of the indirect costs. Good. It's for better in terms of being honest. It's for worse in terms of, I'm sure your donors and the people who run your event are frustrated when they hear that you've raised so much less, right? So I'm seeing 20, 30, 25, 30, 25, 30, at least 25. I have 5 from Sue, that's pretty good. 50% plus for Terry, 2020. So please include that time, because that 20% is not spent cultivating and soliciting other donors. That 20% is not spent writing a major grant proposal. That 20% is not spent sitting down with board members to help them identify their contacts or supporting the work they're doing so they can make thank you calls, so they can set up coffee, so they can make introductions. And I'm seeing so many numbers in that range of 20, 30%. So really important to include staff, right? And you'll see then under 4 that it brings down your net income significantly. Okay, it gets better / worse. Here's a big one for me. Big one. We beg our board members to give for the event. we sometimes say it's an expectation in the job description that you're going to make an outright gift and you're going to buy a table, or you're going to be a sponsor of our event or whatever. And we as staff and our board chairs make please, you know, pull out all the stops, invite everyone. So our board members who may or may not like events and want to go anyway, do the right thing. They do what we ask them to do. So let's say they're going to give us $10,000 for the year. They give $7,500 outright and $2,500 for the event. They're not going to give you more than they ever would. They're just going to divvy it up. So all the money they spend on sponsorships, tables, tickets, contributions, all of that. I want you to make note of that. Probably can't at the moment, but I'm sure you've got a spreadsheet, and the organization I'm thinking of has very specific columns for how much board members are giving to each of these 12 things. So my problem here is that most board members would have given these dollars outright along with their annual support, their board general operating gift, however you want to define it. They're only doing this because we ask them. So the event is not spurring that income. It's forcing us actually to direct some board income to the event. Now they buy a table, maybe they have people at the table who don't really care, and we've fed them and we've done all these things. Even with the online, we've sent the swag bag, we've hired the technology company and so forth. There is cost to these gifts that the board member is making, which don't necessarily have to be there. So I just want you to make note of that number for now under 5. Then under 6, right, I want you to make note of what all the dollars your board gave for that event that you think they would have given otherwise. And I'd love you to type in the questions box the percentage of all the board support of this event you really don't want to run. What percentage of all their support do you think you could have gotten otherwise if you sat down and explained it to them? How much did you get otherwise? Let's say you had to cancel your event last year. So many donors came through. I know at many organizations, all the board members still came through. What percentage do you think you still could have gotten? 75, 90, 50, 70, 75, 50 again, 60, 90, whatever percentage you could have gotten otherwise isn't necessarily income. And you can take most of that, we'll come back to the little tweaks, most of that off your bottom line. I had an organization I worked with that had they did an event that brought in $120,000 and it had $40,000 in direct costs. However, the board had contributed $40,000 and would have given something like 38 of it otherwise. It's a long time ago, 15 years ago, so the numbers are a little odd, but at least 90-95%. Now, so when we took just the board giving out of there, this event was only netting $40,000. So forget all the staff time and everything. Just based on that, I asked them, was this event worth $40,000? Next is the infamous quid pro quo. And this is where our board member makes a gift and someone makes a gift to them. How many times are people swapping gifts with each other? My number one wish, as many of you know, my number one wish for the fundraising world is for board members to stop this quid pro quo fundraising, where they end up giving a lot of their money to organizations they don't care about to support their friends, and their friends give a lot of money to their organizations to be, you know, which they don't care about, their organization, I should say. And every year the board member has to go back and get those and swap gifts. And when your board member leaves your board, all those gifts leave with your board member. Because most of the time, those donors never develop a relationship to us. Many of our board members will tell us, please don't bother my donors during the year. I don't want you even writing to them during the year. I'll solicit them. Doesn't help us in the long run. do a whole webinar on that, actually, and I'm not going to keep going on that, but it's important to understand that some of these gifts are costing your board members. The people who sit at their table sometimes have asked your board members to sit at their tables. So I'd like you to make note of that number as well. And it can be rather significant for the organizations that have higher powered board members who know, you know, who know a lot of people who have capacity or work at corporations and can ask their friends at other corporations and so forth. It can be rather significant. So under question 10, line 10 now or later, maybe you can figure out that quid pro quo. It might be very hard, and this might be something where you just have in mind, you have in mind that there's probably some of this happening. But in some cases, it's pretty obvious, right? Now, let's see, I think I had a question. And Aaron says, when our board members sign up for the run, there's a service charge taken out. So they're giving for the run, and it helps your run number, but then 3% goes. So if they gave $10,000, you just lost $300 rather than them just writing the checks outright. Good point. And let's see, Ruth. Hey, hello, Ruth. Good to see you. Is the webinar available that you do on quid pro quo fundraising with board members? Is that online? Yeah, I think for, you know, Kyle, maybe you can check on that. I can't remember what's up under free resources. I don't know if I have a short video on it, but you know what, Ruth, we'll see what we have and we'll send that out with the recording of this tomorrow if it's there. There may be some stuff for members that wouldn't be available to others, so we'll let you know one way or another. And Kyle, if you can make a note of that, that would be great. Thank you for that question, Ruth. So quid pro quo, hard to say, harder to manage. And here's another one that you won't like. How many of my best donors over the years have come to the events because they want to be supportive? You know, they love the organization. They'll do anything for the organization, and they know it's important. We ask them, come, oh, I hope we're going to see you at the gala this year. Oh, please come to our auction. And so they come. Maybe they buy items. And would they have given, if you'd said, you know what, we know you don't want to come to these events, would you just write a check instead? Many of you who know me well know I never go to events. I turn down every invitation to sit at someone's table. They say there's no obligation, you're a friend, you're in the business, we'd love you to be there. No, no, no. For every person who enjoys being at your event, there's someone who doesn't enjoy it and is there, and there's someone who simply won't go, which is another point. If you're just dealing with events, you're meeting all the people like me who just don't go to them. But let's say you can get someone to go just based on guilt or sense of responsibility or wanting to help. Those people would generally give their gifts otherwise. So you need to make note, because often our events, the room, and I'm always going to say room. Well, now we're in a Zoom room, but we're going to be doing most of these in person again, not all. We know so many of these people. Either we know them and they'd give otherwise, or we don't know them and we're going to have to work hard to get their money the next time because they're not really related to us. So we have to make note of this, painful as it is. And I have a question from Beth. When we discuss not holding a gala, some board members say people love our event and some sponsors won't donate the same amount without it. Do we just need to stick it out and try to retain our audience and try to cultivate true believers? It's a very good point. And I would say mostly yes. It really depends on how much money is coming in there and how much you'd lose, right? Doing this analysis. Some people love the events. And some people will only give to them. And that's why we have to do these calculations. Because if you have people, if you have $100,000 of income, I don't know what your budget is and how much that event raises, but if you're bringing on, if you're clearing $100,000, you have a $500,000 budget and you can't get that money elsewhere, you do the event. If those people who love it, you're only clearing $25,000, you've got a $3 million budget, no. So that's, and doing these calculations would help you help them understand. right? It does mean you have to, if you're taking out the staff, you need the staff need to do something else to show them, yes, we can make more money doing this another way. So it really is important to have these numbers in front of you. Okay. So now we have what I call the new net figures, and these are the last items here. You probably want to fill these out now. The Excel spreadsheet is set up so that it will automatically add the other numbers above and give you an answer here. But the bottom line is, once we have that net on top, we have to take out everything the board members would give otherwise, everything they would have solicited otherwise. How about all the gifts they could have gotten, right? Oh, I covered that, and it's six. All the people who they could have gotten to give without the event, all their quid pro quo gifts, right? So that also means that that gift wasn't a quid pro quo, right? Board members can do the quid pro quo within events or just in annual giving. Either way, it's not helping. And all the gifts the donors would have made otherwise. When we take these four things out and on top of everything else, then we have the net income. And the question is the event justified as a fundraiser event now? We have no money in the nonprofit world to waste. We have to be as efficient as possible. We have a portfolio. We can only take so much risk. But and we don't have a lot of money to work with. So we cannot afford to not do these calculations and use our money and our time and our board members' money and time the best way possible. So a lot to take in, right? And the goal is to come away from it with a new mindset. Every dollar, I know how hard it is. I worked in organizations. I led an organization with a $200,000 budget, no reserve, nothing. I know how hard it is to raise money. I've been doing it my whole life. I know how important every dollar can seem. But if we don't do some of these calculations, and then we can't get to the next step. And again, we don't have a lot of resources. So we must use our resources as well as possible. We hear all the time about these massive corporations that take a $1 billion write-off. They buy a company, it turns out not to work, and they just write it off. And maybe the stock price goes down, and those of us who have stock, we lose some money. But they have all this, corporations waste money day in and day out. And many of the corporations our board members are involved with waste money day in and day out. And then they look at us, we don't have that option. We're not doing that. We can't do that. We don't have the luxury. And so we really, for the sake of all the people whose lives we're trying to impact, we need to do this as strategically as possible. So, questions, any more questions? I'll take those now. And let's see, I think one just came in. Let's see. Caroline just saying, I can't wait to share this with my board and other Georgia shelters. Right, Caroline's with a shelter in Georgia, which is great. Any other questions about this? I think your board members should find this appealing, right? Many of them want us to operate more like a business. This is exactly what a business does. I was speaking to someone this morning I might be working with, and he runs a for-profit company, much better serving the fundraising community, much better than I run mine, because he said, oh, we stopped doing this because it was just, you know, too expensive and too much work. That's what companies do. We're not going to do this. It's too expensive and too much work. We should do the same thing. Danielle, can you give a couple of examples of cultivating events that are not fundraising events? Yes, absolutely. Thank you. So today, let's say we're still virtual. So one is inviting key donors or people we think could be key donors to a Zoom session with an expert in your field. Danielle, what organization are you with? If you could type that in. It could be one of your program directors or a panel of your program directors. Depending on your cause, you could have participants who are talking about the impact the cause makes. Oh, Danielle, of course, Danielle, hello. I've worked with the Billings Public Library Foundation. I hadn't read the last name without my glasses. It's nice to see you here today. So, Danielle, you could have your library director, or maybe if you have a director of research, talk about where library research is going in the future. Or the director could talk about everything you've done this year to build community during the pandemic, the role you've played, and looking forward what the next few years are going to be like. You might have some national expert in library, library technology. I'm missing that one word about libraries, the science of libraries. Or it could be something that's related to authors. And then I would ask my board members to each invite one or two of these people we're interested in to join them. So that's a cultivation event. Once we're back in person, it could be in someone's home. I love parlor meetings, 12 to 20 people. I find 12 is a critical mass, 12 to 20 in someone's living room, same thing. And this summer could be outdoors with the pandemic. I just announced yesterday, some of you have probably seen, I'm going to do outdoor fundraising trainings for boards and staff this summer. People will be excited to gather outdoors safely and hear from an expert. You could actually maybe even do some sort of writing seminar that some people might be interested in as a library. If you've got donors already who you want to thank, you could have the chair of your board possibly take them all out to dinner to meet each other. I want to thank you. I want to have you all to my home or take you out. That's a bit cultivation, thank you, recognition. Many of you will be familiar with the donor cycle where we educate, involve, ask, thank, recognize, and so forth. So some of these events could be a combination of educating, involving perhaps, once we can do volunteer events. As a matter of fact, you know, volunteer hands-on events are great cultivation events to ask, say to a bunch of people, we've got a big project, we could really use your help. We need to go through a couple of thousand books that were donated and figure out which ones we can use and such. We're going to have people come together on a certain day for 3 hours. Would you join us? We'll give you instructions and such. I'm thinking this off the top of my head for a library, but there are a variety of such events. And Danelle, I could always answer a question offline as well for you. Mary, I was wondering if invites of the sponsors become permanent donors. We have not done well. Oh, any of the sponsors, not that much. People always say that, people want to say that events are a great way to find donors. The problem is it's very hard to take a special event donor and turn that person into an ongoing non-event donor. Our goal should be to take them out of the event and into annual giving, where the expectation is very different and the relationship is much closer to the organization. It's actually very hard to do. Hundreds of people come to the event. Where do you start? A lot of work trying to identify who. I actually have a 5% rule. Only look at 5% of the people who've come and focus on them. But if that's really the case, it means 95% of them you can't even effectively work on to cultivate. It's very hard because you have hundreds of people. It's like direct mail or something. You can't work on all of those people, right? You have to find a few if you want to have a one-on-one connection. So it is hard to get people who are giving to the event to give. Otherwise, the other thing is that the event is the most transactional gift. They're giving and they're getting something. They're getting visibility. They're getting fun. They're getting time with friends, and it's hard to move someone from a relationship where they're getting something in return to something that's more altruistic, where they're giving it and in return they're getting a really good feeling of making an impact. So very hard, Mary, and that's and a lot of times people don't want to hear that, but it's actually very difficult to turn event donors into ongoing donors. And I'm going to take one more from Laura, and then we'll stop because we said 45 minutes, though you know I'm always available at Brian at Asking Matters. This one is, most of my board members are scared to ask for money outside of events. I'm hoping to coach them and add new board members with greater fundraising. In the meantime, I think it still makes sense to have a fundraising event. We just do one. Would you disagree? Okay. So first of all, you know, most of you know I do a ton of work on how to get your board to fundraise. If you're not a member, you may want to be a member. It's really cheap, $9 a month, though I'm not here to just plug that. I do all sorts of trainings and stuff. I'm big on that. They need training. They need to learn it's not about the money. They need to learn it's not about hitting up everyone they know. We have to stop asking them to hit up everyone they know. I do think most organizations can benefit from one fundraising event, not all. A marquee event that does a lot in addition to fundraising, right? It does give you visibility and so forth and so on. My point is just that if it's doing all those other things and isn't making much money, have the event, but don't make it a fundraising event. It's because you don't even maximize the money at a fundraising event because you're selling tickets at a price many people can afford. And then you have to try and upsell them, buy a sponsorship, buy a table, buy a higher price ticket, buy a raffle ticket. As opposed to when we work with them one-on-one, we can ask them for a gift that's personally significant to each of them. So I can't say a categorical yes or no. It's great for an organization to have visibility. It doesn't always have to be through a fundraising event. And sometimes I negotiate with my board members, you know, would you give the money we would lose by not having an event? And many of them say, yes, I'd love not to have to ask all my friends for money. I'll just write the check. And instead, I'll find two or three people who might be passionate about the library, the shelter, my environmental group, and let's see what we can do with them. So that is a quick, intense, are your fundraising events making money? I hope it's helpful. I hope it gives you something to go back to your board, your fellow staff, your executive director with. And I wish you the best. I thank you for being out there fundraising. I thank you for doing the events, which is something I never wanted to do. I'm glad there are people who will do them. And I wish you all the best. I hope that you are turning a corner, your family, your organization, as we see some light at the end of the tunnel here. I wish you all the best this year. Have a great afternoon.